It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We got a big hour coming your way. Pete Hegseth will join me through it. But so many breaking stories. Tough drilling it down to 3 big ones as we continue to follow multiple stories on Capitol Hill around the country. And around the world today, we know that they're going to have a big January 6th anniversary event. We know it's a terrible day in American history, no doubt about it. But I've never seen a party take advantage of a bad incident more than the Democrats, CNN, MSNBC have taken advantage of January 6th. Moment of silence on the House steps. The president's going to come by. And what they're going to do is try to say that every Republican was there and thought it would be a great idea to ransack the Capitol that day. No, that's not the case. I think they 100% overplayed their hand, but we'll deal with it. Also, it's important to find out there's other things going on to actually overwhelm that moment. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Title 42 or not, the border is not open. We will continue to fully enforce our immigration laws in a safe, orderly, and humane manner.
Right. HHS Secretary Mayorkas, a disgrace. Biden's border plan, a step in the right direction, but not the cure for border, which he broke. And by the way, he's just days from appearing at the border for the first time in his 50-year career. It'll be El Paso. We'll discuss.
Number two.
His cell phone pinged in the area of the crimes at least a dozen times before the attacks. Police also say that a white Hyundai was seen speeding away after the attack. From there, they were able to track that car's toll tag from Washington State all the way to Pennsylvania. There in Pennsylvania, they got a DNA sample from his parents' trash bin. That DNA sample linked back to the knife sheath.
There you go. A little bit of the mystery solved. Details of the murders of the 4 University of Idaho students were revealed in a courtroom yesterday when 28-year-old Brian Kohberger made his first appearance as the accused killer. I will bring you the grisly details, even though we still don't know his motive.
Number one.
This is like the fringe, right? This is not MAGA Republicans who are doing this. These are people who are so part of the right and so destructive that they're even beyond Trump in terms of where they are. And they want to burn the whole thing down.
Mark Thiessen, can't really say you're wrong. Breakthrough, though. That's the word coming from Kevin McCarthy's office after 11 unsuccessful rounds of votes over the course of 3 days in his quest to become speaker. The latest details are coming your way. And let's look at some of the details. First off, there's a deal cut. They said it's been on the table for months, according to the 19 that don't want to vote for him, even though he's got 200 plus votes. He doesn't have 218 needed. So what do the Freedom Caucus want? They want a motion to vacate just one person. So if someone stands up and says, I don't like Kevin McCarthy, I want to put it to a vote to oust him, like Boehner and Ryan and Hastert, whatever, put it to a vote. So he'll say, all right. He said no on 5. Then he said yes. Then he said, now they said, do it on 1. Okay. Doesn't mean he's out, but when they put it to a vote, it's going to be a delay of everything, almost like a mini impeachment. So other thing they want is 2 to 3 members of the Freedom Caucus on the Rules Committee, okay? Votes on term limits, all right? You know it's never going to pass the Senate, but go ahead, do it. And then the border security legislation. No kidding. Everybody wants border security legislation. He would not stop that. So basically, you have people who are never Kevin, like Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, who says, yeah, with a big smile on her face, doing CNN and MSNBC, I don't think I'll ever vote for him. Okay? We don't know why. Don't think so. Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure no one's disputed this. It was he, Kevin McCarthy, backing the incumbent, Boebert, who provided money and support for her to win her runoff election. That was too close to call, and they would need a recount. But there is optimism that today they got this deal. And the way we understand from Ken Buck yesterday is the reason why you don't have a wearing down of that number is they all agreed, the 19, to vote as a block. Here's Kevin McCarthy, cut 1.
Does undercut your potential power of speaker?
I mean, has it undercut the power of all the other speakers?
But it was used over John Boehner.
We have been in this position since 1859. I mean, doesn't that inherently mean that you would be a weaker speaker?
No. Explain. You'd only be a weaker speaker if I was a freak.
So, would he be a weaker speaker? Democratic Congressman Gallego said, yeah, he's going to make the job weaker forever. I don't really think so. You characterize it the way you want it, the way the party has it, the one you get support. Who other could get votes? Byron Donalds got a lot of votes. Jim Jordan, not a lot, under 20. Jim Jordan doesn't want it, but he keeps getting votes. Mike Johnson is a dark horse. Jim Banks is a dark horse. Well, we'll see where we go. But I cannot tell you how tedious this is. I don't think it's a good process. I like a debate going back and forth and negotiation, but this could have been done weeks ago behind closed doors. Maybe a day, maybe a delay on a vote would have been interesting. But now it's so past that. So I thought Laura Ingraham did a good job engaging Matt Gaetz on why he's a never Kevin. Cut for it.
I wouldn't be betting on my vote for Kevin McCarthy under almost any circumstance. But it's important to note that all of those bullet
points personal,
you just
then.
Presented.
Wait, hold on. Wait, that's personal then.
You just made
this very principled point. No, no. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I'm a man of principle, and I believe in X, Y, and Z, but if he gives me X, Y, and Z, I'm not going to vote for him. What?
Well, here's
How does that make sense?
Here's how it makes sense, Laura. Kevin McCarthy is the masthead of the lobby corps, and I resent the extent to which Kevin McCarthy utilizes the lobbyists and the special interests to be able to dictate how political decisions are made, how policy decisions are made, and how leadership decisions are made.
I wonder if this has anything to do with the allegations against him and didn't feel he didn't get proper backing. That's probably where most of it is, because also you have Matt Gaetz coming up and now fundraising off his stance against Kevin McCarthy, which many of you, I mean, I'm watching some of your responses. I hear it. A lot of people say, I really side with that 19 as if Kevin McCarthy is the problem that was pro-omnibus. And he wrote that bill and that came out of the Senate that was passed by a simple majority in the House, but it was not one Republican voted for it outside, I think, Brian Fitzpatrick, Republican from Pennsylvania. But it was Kevin McCarthy's problem. Border security is an issue. Making the Ukraine money accountable, keeping a close watch on it. I don't get it. I still don't get it. In the big picture, though, there's a lot of very smart people who think they're doing a great thing, making everybody accountable, making it more official before just automatically saying next man up. One of them that was asked to put it in perspective was Victor Davis Hanson. He's watching this 3,000 miles away. Cut 13.
If one of their people stood up, there's going to be 10 or 15 moderates who say that he's intolerable. I will not vote for him. And what's looming in the background of all this is somebody, either on one side or the other, is going to cut a deal with the Democrats to get the House working. And that's a red line. When that happens, you might as well give up because you've just betrayed millions of voters. They had more votes in the popular vote for conservative Republicans than the Democrats. And you have an oath. You're bound to the people to get something done. And you'll break it. If one person makes a deal with the Democrats, then everybody's been betrayed.
The one who's getting the most votes every single time, every single Democrat, is Hakeem Jeffries. 12 times. I don't want to hear any more nomination speeches. We got it. I understand Victoria Spartz now votes present. She's the Ukrainian-born congresswoman who basically has been leaning on Kevin McCarthy to push for this funding to continue. A lot of Republicans don't want to do it. You would think that she'd be the last one to jump off his bandwagon, but she did. So what is to come? I think something gets done today. I don't think anybody wants to work through the weekend. I think that the never Kevins will probably be 5, 6, or 7. I only think he can lose 5. So if he gets up to 7, it's going to be a lot of pressure to get down. But right now there's 19-20, and there's power in numbers. Here's Brett Baer on what he thinks will happen today.
You're heading into the weekend, Friday, where there will be expected some members on both sides of the aisle that will not show up, will not be there for various reasons, absences. Remember, the Democrats every time, every ballot, have hit 212, the maximum number that they have, the votes. If there are fewer, it changes the math. and your magic number becomes less, and that is possible to then have that number as long as it's more than 212, but there will be some Democrats missing as well.
So if you get Matt Gaetz and some of the others, Norman, just to vote present, it'll got to drop the number down. But if you go below Hakeem Jeffries, Jeffries becomes Speaker. Good luck with that. I'll take some calls on where you stand. A lot of people think they just love that what these 19 are doing. I don't. I think that a lot of this stuff could have been done behind the scenes. You wait a day or two, final thought. Think this is not, doesn't look good on Kevin McCarthy for his purposes because it shows you're not making your first deal, your deal, you couldn't pull off. How are you going to deal with a budget? How are you going to deal with Ukrainian funding? How are you going to deal with investigations? How are you going to deal with the lack of compliance when it comes to subpoenas? So to go against my argument, which I just did, Kevin McCarthy doesn't look good because he didn't get this deal done. And you know that Nancy Pelosi did a deal. One of the things she said to the squad is, I just need 2 more years. Give me 2 more years and I'm not coming back. And she held to her word and she got all the votes. So I think McCarthy wants more than 2 years. I think he wants to stay in the majority. Very often when you lose the majority, you go to the minority, you quit, like Denny Hastert did. But you know, Nancy Pelosi went to minority, says, I have nothing else to do. I only have a husband waiting for me 3,000 miles away with a hole in his head thanks to a hammer attack, which we still don't know details about. But at 82, I'd still rather be a backbencher. But that's the deal she cut. When we come back, these Idaho murders that has every college kid transfixed, because obviously people can resonate, especially if you have an off-campus housing in a place that you think is primarily safe. We have details from an affidavit released yesterday. We have a suspect as well. So we'll go into that and then also discuss what's going on at the border. The president's going. Guess what? There's no Republican congressional travel group going with him right now. He's going to go by himself. And I think that's a mistake. I think Governor Abbott should really show up in El Paso and stay with him the entire time. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show, the Friday edition. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We know ahead of time, before I get into the evidence, Sean, is that on Reddit, he put something out saying, you know, I'm studying for my PhD in criminology. If you're a criminal, what did you think? How did it feel? He was collecting all of this information. And so we've got him casing, targeting this home. We've got him returning to the scene of the crime. And what we've got is an eyewitness.
Yeah, you have an eyewitness. You also have the phone showing he's been there 12 times. He even came after the murder the next day at about 9 o'clock in the morning. And what you do is have, mysteriously, his dad flies out for him to drive back home. Really? Guy's 28 years old, needs to drive back with his dad. Don't you think his dad probably knew, logic would tell you, that something was up? And, of course, we're talking about the Idaho murders, this brutal, grisly situation where this guy, perhaps, maybe for the first time, if we're to believe some of the reports, this Brian Kohberger, as he sits in a jumpsuit now, extradited from Pennsylvania. He is now in Idaho. And it turns out that this guy, he seemed to fit the description of one of the roommates. One of the roommates came down and came front to face to face with a guy about 5'10", they say thin but athletic build, who had bushy eyebrows and was wearing a mask. Obviously, these are all clues. We had no idea. And when this roommate sees him on the inside of the house, goes back to her room and locks her door. She had said earlier that she said she heard crying and pleading, but she thought maybe it was on social media, perhaps. There's something really weird there. Obviously not a great decision. I understand you freeze when you see a would-be murderer or an intruder, but not to call for hours seems to me, from what I know, needless to say, odd. So at 4 a.m., this guy receives a Kernodal, one of the roommates, receives a DoorDash food order at the home. The surviving roommate, who ended up coming face-to-face with this guy, said she heard what sounded like gun claves playing with her dog in the bedroom. Obviously, there was something else going on. From 4 to 4:12, one of the roommates said this, who would later see him face-to-face, that she heard a gun clave say, "There's someone in here." So the roommate opened up her door and looked around a second time after she thought she heard crying from the adjacent room. Cellular records at 4:12 show Kernodle was using TikTok and therefore likely awake. This is the last precise timestamp provided from the home in the affidavit. A neighbor security camera caught a distorted audio of what sounds like a whimper followed by a loud thud. A dog can also be heard barking. The roommate opened up her door a third time and encountered the suspected killer that we all see in a jumpsuit right now. That was between 4:20 and 4:25. She froze. A white Hyundai Elantra, believed to be driven by Kohlberger, was seen departing the area at that time. Police believe the crime would have been carried out up until 4:25. Why she wasn't attacked is odd, thankfully, but it's weird. You go and show you kill four people, and then you see a fifth, and you keep walking. He also was heard saying, they overheard someone saying, "You're going to be okay." When someone said, "There's someone here," says, "You're going to be okay." Obviously, nobody was. And now we have some more details. So here's Brian Foley, former homicide detective, talking about the roommate that came face-to-face with the alleged killer. Cut 15.
There is only one person to be vilified here, and that's the monster that killed those four people. Hard stop right there. To vilify this witness is wrong. Look, you don't know how you're going to react in certain situations. As cops, we train for it, and we see so many scenarios, and we think of how we're going to react. The average person, you don't know how you're going to react. You don't know the scenario. You perfectly described what that house was probably like. The movement after hours, you had an Uber or a food drop off at 4 a.m. from like a DoorDash. There's a lot going on there. I know witnesses that have lived with this, and it is an awful, awful thing to live with for the rest of your entire life. And I feel bad that she's in that scenario. It's horrible. That it's so easy to judge, and we all say how we would react. Bottom line, you don't know how you're going to react. There's one bad guy in this situation. He's behind bars.
No kidding. What we don't know is how he entered the house. We don't know whether anyone knew him, because we know he was stalking the house. And why he walked by one roommate at the end, and the motivation for the killing entirely. Jonathan Gilliam, Cut 18. He's a former FBI special agent.
These people are hunters. But I think in this case, what the evidence shows is that he was very interested in that neighborhood, specifically where that house was on King Street leading up to that time. You know, the way these things work out and the way these psychopathic killers work, that's just the way that they are. They're there, they're very aggressive, but they can be startled very easy. And I wouldn't be surprised if we find out that this guy has killed multiple people. We know that he stalked people or was at least going to a pub or a brewery there in Pennsylvania and was asking bizarre questions of women. So we know that he has a pattern of this behavior.
Evidently, he applied to intern with the police department. We know that he was going for his PhD. We know that he was teaching a class, proctoring a class. We know he went back and taught after these murders took place. We also know that they were following him, and they had state troopers pull him over two or three times. They wanted to see, I guess, about his eyebrows now that we've read the affidavit. They also wanted to see his hands, see if there are any cuts on his hands. And you just wonder what the dad knew. So at least the victim's families would have a chance to get into that courtroom and make him uncomfortable every moment that he's still alive.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, Pete Hegseth is here. Pete, we're talking about the breakthrough that could be happening. First speaker. We're also talking about what's happening with the 28-year-old Brian Kohlberger, who's been accused of killing those four Idaho students. And we're also talking about what's happening on Sunday in El Paso. I've not really discussed, and by the way, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Interesting thing that you're doing here. I didn't even know, and I know you have your clothes made for you, right?
Yeah, a lot of them, right. thanks to Fox.
You have, and this is a compliment, I'm just going to notice this, if you're not watching the stream, you have stripes that go across.
Correct.
And then when it comes to the sleeve, they go down.
Yes.
Have you noticed this, Allison? Have you?
There aren't many shirts that have stripes that go horizontal.
Yeah.
I picked it out. I can have my guy talk to your guy.
But, I mean, has this been done? Did someone say, whoa, let's put the brakes on this?
Well, mostly they say horizontal stripes make you look wider.
Yeah.
But don't we want that? I want to look bigger and wider.
Not in the Dan Marino before and after shots that we watch with Weight Watchers. But, well, we'll see. I'm just saying it's something noteworthy.
Thank you for your attention to detail.
Right. So today you have a busy day.
Yeah, I got a lot going on, just like you.
You're doing Dan's Bongino show.
Show. I think Sean's show tonight. They're doing a live audience show.
9 o'clock.
A lot happening with the speakers race. So we'll see what happens then.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening. But I think you're doing something else. Are you doing something else?
I got a couple other private meetings. If you'd like me to open up my calendar,
yeah, go ahead.
For your audience.
Go ahead.
All right, we've got a review of how the New Year's Eve show went.
Really?
With a couple producers.
Who's going to go over with that?
You know, Brian Tully, Megan Albano. Couple of producers here with a lot of sway.
We're actually going to do an after-action report?
We're doing an after-action to make sure next year's is even better than last year's.
Right.
I'm meeting with Steph Freeman. She produces Kudlow Show.
Oh, I'm going to be on that too.
Just to catch up.
You just want to say hello?
Just to say hello. Yeah. I'm probably going to go talk to Gavin Haddon, who produces Fox and Friends, just to say hello.
Right. But you know, they know you're up to something. When you walk in there,
so I try to mix it up so that every once in a while I'm up to nothing. They think when I
got
show
no agenda,
up, right. No agenda.
Then when you do go in,
and
there.
Then every third time there's a big agenda item that I'm trying to push.
Right. I remember the other day you came in. I think the headline was "Too Much Will."
That was it.
Will Kane.
Today I'm not going to say that.
Right.
But three visits
the point
from
was
now.
Made.
Do you remember what I said about Will?
Right. How
can
many
we limit
times
his word count, please?
Right. And do you keep tallies too?
Yes. That's right. Jennifer, my wife, your former. Producer,
right?
She at home tabulates every word stated on Fox and Friends weekend.
And
we go over it when I come home, and we after action it, and then I send in my complaints.
And the other thing is, the big question is, do contractions count as one word or two words?
We go with two when the other person is speaking.
Right, it's
because
two words.
It's two words. When I do a contraction, it's only one.
Right. Do you think Will's too deep a thinker?
He's a deep thinker.
Right.
He's an analytical mind. Does it make you think,
does it make you think when you answer, I didn't put enough thought into this, and I've fallen short?
Right. It makes me wonder, why don't I think this deeply about things?
Anything.
Anything at all, as much as Will Kane analyzes.
Like Will said to me, and it was so true, like the fact that I'm still thinking about it, he said to me, when are you on the air? And I thought it was building towards a comedy. He goes, I'm doing the morning show, and I do the radio show, and I got to hit it two. And then he asked me to fill in on the five. He goes, yeah, I can never do that. I go, he goes, because I need to step back and think about things. So I go, wow. So he didn't mean to insult me, but the more I thought about it, he's saying that I'm not thinking.
Yeah, he's effectively said the same thing to me.
Really?
We'll bring up like
how do you
I want to get a pair of cowboy boots. He'll be like, wow, you got it. The history of cowboy boots. And I've thought about
you don't just get them.
Pointy toe, square toed, halfway toe, what shade, what leather. I'm like, yo, bro, I just want to get like walk into the store and grab a pair.
Right.
But that is such a wonderful part of Will Kane.
Right.
He just dissects everything down to the minutiae.
It's like you could live your life wrong. I'm just going to tell you the right way to do it, which is my way, by outlining how different your life is than mine.
He had 20 resolutions for 2023.
Did he write? Are you kidding?
He listed them on
his
Instagram.
Were they personal or for the country?
Personal resolutions, 20 of them on Instagram.
Right.
Which I plan to keep a running tally. All year long of how he's doing.
So I noticed one question that Will got out of that he – and I just give him so much credit. So they were talking about what happened with DeMar and his injury on Monday, and the whole country was praying for him. And Ainsley said, just tell me what your faith – what do you do with your faith? And he goes, Ainsley, I'm always looking to get better, but that's something I keep private. And I'm like, wow. Now, even in a Will Kane way – he kept it private in a classy way.
He did a nice job.
As if it's his fault. It's something he's working on.
It's true. He's very self-reflecting. I'm having a self-reflective moment here that maybe you like Will Kane more than you like me.
I would say this. I don't feel like you're judging me as much as Will does. Like, I feel like I could be myself. No, you don't expect me to have a deep thought.
Oh, so I'm a low expectation guy.
Yeah.
Easy to be around, like an old shoe.
Surfacey. Yeah.
Surfacey.
Like an old shoe that you're almost ready to get rid of. Right.
Yep. But you wear every day.
You wear every day. Because?
Because it's comfortable.
And you know it's going to be there.
Always delivers.
The worst is when you break a shoelace and you realize the damage on the eyelet on the other side. And you say to yourself, how do I ever get this through this small hole? Well, and I don't have a 1-800-DELIVER-ME-A-SHOELACE hotline.
What do guys like me who don't think that much? I just tie a knot on the end. And I say, you're never going back through that hole.
You mean you're a guy with military training?
Yeah.
Like you're in Iraq and you're saying to yourself, my lace broke. You can't say, I got to call Amazon.
I need a new eyelet.
Right. You can't say that.
You just tie that thing in a knot and drive on.
That's why we have the finest fighting force. If you go to the Russians, wouldn't do that. The Russians would demand to go back.
They would say, and their commanders would say, what, you want boots?
Right. That's true.
The rest of them don't even have boots.
For both feet?
Both.
General, go ahead. I'm right behind you. That's what the Russians say, only in Russian.
Absolutely.
They've lost 18 generals. I think it's probably up to 23 now.
And they're bringing back like really obese guys who are in retirement.
Right.
Generals now.
And prisoners. Who aren't fighting for the actual Russian force. They're fighting for the Wagner mercenary force.
The mercenary group.
So it's if Blackwater, now no longer existent, was leading us in Afghanistan and Iraq.
It was kind of the case at some points.
They did have some contractors. We had
a lot of contractors at one point.
Right. But they would stay to fight with you. And it's not like, hey, I got a better deal. I'm going to Nambia. So, like, you know, they were Americans.
They were. And very committed vets, combat vets. I don't know how we got here.
I'm not sure.
But if I needed Will Cain to be a mercenary force for you and I, he would be there for us.
Nope, he'd think about it. And he'd go, let me see what that means. So here
is the dental plan.
The audio's not great, but it sets the table. Kevin McCarthy on the chance of him being speaker today. Cut one.
Has this undercut your potential power as speaker?
I mean, has it undercut the power of all the other speakers?
But it was used over John Boehner.
We have been in this position since 1859. I mean, doesn't that inherently mean that you would be a weaker speaker?
No. Explain. You'd only be a weaker speaker if I was a freedom.
What was that last word? That last word was so key. Oh, afraid.
Afraid.
Right.
It sounds like concessions are being made. Sounds like I'd be surprised if he got it today. It sounds like today might be a whittling down of the 10 or 12 who are part of the 20 whose resistance are not as personal as that core 5 or 6, because it seems like he's meeting a lot of the concessions. I will say this. It feels like a lot of the concessions are a return to the way the House used to operate
before
a lot of the power was consolidated in the Speaker's gavel. And in that sense, if we can get back to some regular order where there's transparency on bills, that's a good thing. So I'm not as pessimistic or disheartened by the fact that there's multiple ballots. Let it go on. It doesn't bother me. But ultimately, they're going to need to coalesce.
I think it'll be
Kevin McCarthy.
We do need a house. It's not like it's even functioning. We don't need a house?
Clear. No. Right. More bad ideas, more bad bills being passed out of Washington, D.C.
Well, they're not all bad. I mean, I would like to see Mike McCall – head of foreign relations. I want to see Michael Waltz in charge of armed services.
I do too, but they're all going to die in the Senate, and they're all going to be vetoed by Joe Biden. So nothing policy-wise is actually going to change. You can create a contrast, and you've had the power of the purse, so you have real leverage there. To me, it's the investigations and what the committees can do when they have those gavels. If that happens tomorrow, great. If it happens 2 weeks from now, that's fine. We've been waiting 2 years for this. We can wait another couple weeks.
So, Pete, I thought 2 days ago I said it's going to go 19, it's going to go 17, it's going to go 12, and then we're going to see if we can get below 7. But then I heard this with Bill Hemmer yesterday.
I think there is an agreement. I think it's a reasonable agreement. And I think what's holding it up right now is there's sort of a blood oath between the 20 that they won't move until they're all ready to move. And so even though 9, 10, 11 of them may agree to this compromise that's been reached, I don't think that they will all move until they're all ready to move.
Interesting. I mean, you alluded to that this morning as well.
Congressman Buck.
That could be the case. I mean, hey, you...
So far, it looks like it's a case.
It looks like it may be the case again today. I just don't know. Point will be made. I have the same frustrations with the uniparty that oftentimes is the case in Washington, D.C. They see Kevin McCarthy as a reflection of that. I think he'll govern more conservative than most people think, likely because of this process, because of Trump, because of the pressure, and because you better create that contrast considering what the Senate and White House are doing right now. I'm just not worried. This is a lot of process and a lot of cable news. But ultimately, it's a good thing when parties have it out over what the future of that party should be. And people who get comfortable where they are made uncomfortable. I'm okay with that. I still think it ends with Kevin McCarthy as the speaker.
I hope so. And one thing, I guess, they made a strategic error. He said, I'm not giving in anymore, and I have earned it. I deserve it. That was the exact opposite of what the 19 wanted to hear. But every once in a while, I just got to remind myself, we're talking about one party. I keep thinking to myself, it's not the squad. You're not going against Nancy Pelosi. These are people that you've always wore the same jersey with. So it just shows you people, what they're trying to do on other channels and in almost every other printed page, is link January 6th, which today is, and the chaos in the House, saying Republicans are coming apart at the seams. Trump's party and power is falling apart. And they're saying the 6th was the culmination, and these people are – that small group is destroying the House right now.
I mean, that's nonsense. They want to tie anything they can to January 6th. But I think it's fair to acknowledge there is a real reckoning going on inside the Republican Party with real grassroots, call them MAGA, call them ultra MAGA, call them conservative, call them Freedom Caucus, whatever you want, completely dissatisfied with the status quo base, of which many of the members of the Republican Party still are. You look at the condition of our country, you say getting along to go along the same way we did business is not going to work when you're $30 trillion in debt and your border's wide open. We better be willing to play real hardball. And their point to Kevin McCarthy is, are you ready to play hardball or are you not?
And they're all upset about the omnibus. Okay, but don't think for a second Kevin McCarthy was for the omnibus.
But that's Mitch McConnell's problem.
Right, but they keep saying, well, the swamp. Swamp. The guy who tried to drain the swamp said, vote for Kevin McCarthy. His name is President Trump. And Boebert said, well, yeah, that's too bad. He's my favorite president, but he's wrong. And Gates says he's not great at HR. He doesn't pick the best people.
I like Gates' nomination of Donald Trump, though. I would like him to be the Speaker
on
of the
January
House.
6th.
I don't care what day it is.
But it is. It was January 5th.
It is January 6th. Fine. Make him the Speaker of the House today. Let him lead the impeachment proceedings against Mayorkas. I would love it. It's not going to happen. That's the big problem of the holdouts, is they don't have a candidate they could ultimately coalesce around.
Right.
So they can resist, understandably so, for the reasons they've stated. But they're still beholden. And I don't like hearing the McCarthy defenders say, well, maybe it's time to cut deals with Democrats. That would be the worst idea. I think that's only to create leverage in negotiations with the other side as well.
Yeah, Hakeem Jeffries said, no, just let them work. He didn't even play the game.
Why would you play the game?
Right. If I was him, I would say, hey, guys, I'm here. Obviously, you got a problem. Let's do a deal. If I'm Hakeem Jeffries. But he said, listen, let them work it out.
But they know Republicans know that's a political death sentence if you cut a deal with the Democrats to get the majority. I mean, talk about being primaried. You are confirming that you are the uniparty.
So here's what Trey Gowdy said. He is optimistic. Cut 9.
I think progress is being made. I hope I'm not uncharacteristically optimistic in saying that. I mean, my friends tell me they're actually talking right now. So you got to whittle the 20 down. Look, Brett, the other night, 4 Republicans voted with Democrats on the motion to adjourn. You can just forget about those 4. If you really are going to side with the Democrats and allow this spectacle to play out on primetime television, then you're not interested in what's best for the Republican Party. But that leaves 16, and I think Kevin's trying to pick them off one by one.
And do you know what his point was there? His point was you have to get the vote to adjourn. You can't just stop voting.
Yep.
And the fact that Republicans were saying keep voting when you knew it was just going to be the same result again, they wanted to adjourn. They expect the Democrats to taunt them with it, but they have more numbers. So if you vote not to adjourn, you can't say you're serious about getting things done, as Trey Gowdy said.
Or they're serious about not wanting Kevin McCarthy. I know we've done 12 ballots. I was just watching America's Newsroom when I came up here. They showed the historical precedent of other Congresses much further back. 36 ballots, 72 ballots, over 100 ballots. We could have that kind of scenario where the heels are dug in and one of them's waiting for the other side to blink. And they don't. I don't think we should write off the possibility that we're here a week from now talking about the 34th ballot.
All right. So are you taping the show, Allison? Good. Because I'm going to say it's going to end today.
You're saying it's ending today.
I'm saying it's ending today.
I'm saying there's no chance it ends today.
You're still taping, Allison? Okay.
Excellent.
We're going to be able to play this
back. I'm
going to
be back here on Friday next week, because I'm in for Steve on Friday next week as well. We shall play that clip, and I will bet you – I was going to bet you Bitcoin, but it's not worth anything anymore, so yeah. I can't do that. I'll just a friendly bet that they're still voting by Friday of next week.
Lunch after the show, at Del Frisco's.
Lunch at Del Frisco's, loser pays.
Almost all of it. Including the tip.
My drinks too?
Right. Your drink. Well, that's tough. No one can actually pay for your breaks. No. That's why you have a tab.
That's right? Exactly right.
So you're looking just exactly to chip right. away at it, Pete.
Yes, every time.
I've got back in a moment.
Pay back.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I've traveled over 140 countries around the world. As I'll paraphrase the phrase in my own neighborhood. The rest of the countries, the world's not a patch on our jeans. If we do what we want to do, we need to do.
Exactly. So well said. Right.
Eloquent.
Yeah, right to the point. It reminds me of my old neighborhood. Because we always talked about jeans and patches.
And the patches on the jeans were where you thought people were from? I don't understand. Is he saying because my jeans might say made in Bangladesh, then that's the only thing I think of?
I think you're actually thinking of that's you're talking supply chain. Well, a couple of things. Every time he's off prompter, his people must just panic. Yesterday, he was asked about the border, and he stopped in the middle. No, he's asked about the standoff on speakers, and he said, what he looked at Kamala Harris and said, what word am I looking for? He said, attention. Attention. So both of them make no sense together. This was such an opportunity for someone, a former attorney general, senator. You could be more supportive than Mike Pence and more powerful if she was competent,
if she was
good,
capable.
And she was supportive. Evidently, behind the scenes, she doesn't feel she's supported. Horrible person to work for. And he couldn't be more disappointed, especially with the border. I mean, would you think about this? If you're her, he had the border and he didn't do a good job, but at least he was flying around talking to people while making deals with Hunter. But he was doing it. She totally blew him off on everything she's asked him.
I guess. I mean, do you really think they had an expectation that Kamala Harris was going to secure the border? Or did they just toss the most difficult task to her because they said,
oh, you know what? I'd be in a jean shirt every day trying to. Going out there, going, we got to get to the bottom of this with goggles on, a hard hat.
Reading books
in a
to
boat.
Actors.
Yeah. The child actors.
Yes.
Who do we have on Sunday?
I don't know who's
and
on
Saturday.
The show. I don't know who's on the show, but it's going to be great.
I'm going to be on.
You're going to be on.
That was
so
your opportunity.
Excellent.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. It's going to be a big hour. Geraldo's waiting on board, just getting out of the shower. He wanted me to buy some time. Shannon Bream, the same Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday, Chief Fox News legal correspondent, Amanda, we have a lot to talk to her about as it officially, it's not only been her show for the last few months, but officially in 2023 to really take hold. As you know, it's a place to listen to and to go to as we come to you on a daily basis. But that show will be based now is based in Washington. I think the only one based in New York City is the ABC show, which was a bunch of specials. So we're really catching up and finding out what's going on. Today's January 6th. We know there's all types of Capitol Hill marking 2 years since the January 6th riots. We also know the Democrats are going overboard. As bad as it was, I'm never going to make an excuse for it. You know about it in real time. Said it then. Now they're trying to link all Republicans and the kerfuffle that they're having with naming a speaker to January 6th. Just like Ultra MAGA is a label that Joe Biden thinks he could market. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Title 42 or not, the border is not open. We will continue to fully enforce our immigration laws in a safe, orderly, and humane manner.
Yep. HHS Secretary, Biden's border plan, a step in the right direction, but not the cure for the border, which he broke. Days from his first ever visit to El Paso, we will discuss.
Number two.
His cell phone pinged in the area of the crimes at least a dozen times before the attacks. Police also say that a white Hyundai was seen speeding away after the attack. From there, they were able to track that car's toll tag from Washington State all the way to Pennsylvania. There in Pennsylvania, they got a DNA sample from his parents' trash bin. That DNA sample linked back to the knife sheet.
Unbelievable, right? Mystery solved. Details of the murders of those University of Idaho students were revealed in a courtroom yesterday when a 28-year-old Brian Kohnberger made his first appearance in a jumpsuit. I'll bring you the grisly details, even though we still don't know his motive.
Number one.
This is like the fringe, right? This is not MAGA Republicans who are doing this. These are people who are so far to the right and so destructive that they're even beyond Trump. In terms of where they are, and they want to burn the whole thing down.
Mark Thiessen, that is the review of many people. I'm not sure what their approach is. He thinks he does know. Breakthrough. That's word coming from Kevin McCarthy's office after 11 unsuccessful rounds of votes in a quest for a speaker. The latest details coming your way. Geraldo, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of these procedures, but it's been like Groundhog Day. They have the vote. Nothing really changes. A few presents, a few for Jim Jordan, a few for Byron Donalds. And then we go back to voting again. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Can you put it in perspective?
Well, I think you have a real situation where radical, ultra-right-wing members, a handful of them, a clique of them, is holding the other House Republicans and through them the entire Congress of the United States, the government of the United States, hostage. I think it's really it's embarrassing. It's deplorable. It's you could go on and on with all of the moaning and wailing. But Matt Gaetz and this crew of gangsters really are holding the government of the United States hostage. What are they going to get? What can Kevin McCarthy give them? It reminds me a lot, Brian. I was thinking about this. It's a lot like what's happening in Israel. In Israel, you have some ultra religious, ultra right wing, a handful of them that Netanyahu is bringing into the government because he needs them to make a majority. So they have disproportionate leverage over Netanyahu in Israel. That's where you're getting some of these far out. Members of the Netanyahu government in Israel, much to the dismay of Israel and lovers of democracy everywhere. That's being played out here. I have no doubt but that eventually Kevin McCarthy will be sustained and, he'll give away whatever he has to get these 20. But the fact that they could hold the government of the United States hostage the way they have, it is so arrogant. Every time I see Matt Gaetz now on Fox or on C-SPAN, I say, what the hell are you doing, you dope? What is this for? Your ego? What are you going to get? And it's just so pathetic. It's so beyond anything rational, reasonable, or patriotic. It makes me sick.
Listen, I don't feel as strongly as you, but I do lean your direction. I just, if you have a different point of view, but you have a goal and a strategy, let's hear it. But just sitting there holding everything up, smugly talking to squad member Democrats who you have nothing in common with, just to kind of put it in the face of other people that believe that Kevin McCarthy is the right way to go. Who, by the way, this is all party politics. Your party. Here's a little of the exchange last night with Laura Ingraham. Cut five.
Great. I love President Trump. I defended him a great deal in Congress, but HR wasn't always his strong suit. President Trump got us folks like Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr and Jim Mattis and Mark Esper, people who didn't always advance America First policy. So I think President Trump is wrong to the extent that he supports Kevin McCarthy. I'm going to support President Trump when he runs for reelection in 2024, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to back him on this play.
By the way, I like all those guys. I love Mattis, love Bill Barr. Jeff Sessions always been classy. And Mark Esper did an admirable job. So I don't know what he's talking about.
And furthermore, one of the great interviews we've seen on television in recent months, maybe years, is watching Sean Hannity with Lloyd Boebert from Colorado on Hannity's show a couple of nights ago. He is the most reasonable conservative. He's such a patriot, Sean is.
Yeah.
He's such a, you know, he's the best of conservatives to me. He's a, you know, he's reasonable, he's rational, he's fair-minded, and he was so flustered by her. He was so, what the hell are you doing? You know, you tell me. All right, now what will make you move? What is it? You know, I was so watching him. He's a dear friend of ours. Loved watching.
Hey, do you want to hear some of it?
Frustration.
Do you want to hear some of it?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay.
You don't have the votes, and it's time to withdraw. He has 203. Your side has 20. Why is it time for him to withdraw and not you when he has so many more votes?
Well, Sean, he needs 218, and he does not have 218. We've been trying to work this out in private, as you said, for months. But Kevin McCarthy didn't even want to listen to us until his disappointing midterms. We all want a unified party. But this isn't chaos. It's a functioning constitutional republic. When everything is said and done, House Republicans will be stronger and better prepared to lead than we ever have before.
And he went on, and she basically comes out with rhetoric and what I think is almost something you'd see in a campaign trail going against a Democrat. But she doesn't understand that this is not a game. This isn't sloganeering. This isn't marketing. This is just decision making.
And that from someone who barely eked out a three-tenths of 1% victory in a heavily Republican district. She should have routed in that district. She barely won, to hang on by her fingernails, and goes and takes that lack of a mandate and parlays it into all this attention. And how much of it is just for attention? I wonder how much of it is just, you know, to get their jollies. It's it's really pathetic.
So I was talking to Pete Hegseth.
I'm not amused by it.
I know that you also like Pete. Pete was just in here, and Pete Hegseth of Fox News, obviously,
terrific,
said, I have no problem. He goes, I have no problem with this process. Let's just have it play out. Maybe he'll just be a more conservative, stronger speaker. And he does not say, and a lot of people don't have that much of a problem, not many, but a lot of people on the right don't have much of a problem with it. People that are upset about it, Mark Levin was upset about it on Sunday. You know, last week, he's like, guys, what are you doing? Why is he not, you know, what do you mean you're going to stand in the way of Kevin McCarthy? And he took on Matt Gaetz. So when you have alienated Mark Levin and I'll just leave Mark Levin and Sean Hannity, when they're not conservative enough for you, I think it's time to go to a therapist if you're a Republican.
I agree. And what's it going to say about the Republican Party? I am a Republican. What's it going to say about the Republican Party going forward to 2024? I mean, is this the way they're going to govern, where, some highwaymen can stick up the whole government and hold it, in stasis when they, parade around posturing? Is this going to be every piece of controversial legislation? Are we going to be held hostage by, some buccaneers who I thought about this. Sorry, Brian. I thought, what's it like? Where did I hear these phrases before? You know what? It's Marlon Brando in The Wild One. When confronted by a member of the community, said, what are you rebelling against? Brando says, what do you got? And James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause. These are rebels without a cause. It's like the Diary of a Mad Housewife, to continue the movie analogy. What's the point of this? Is this for the conservative movement? Is this going to, lead to a different government? Or do they want, as I started with that Israel analogy, do they want disproportionate power within
the
their
rules.
Own caucus.
Well, within the rules
the
committee.
Radicals.
They do actually want that in the rules committee. But here's the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that a lot of people are pointing to Kevin McCarthy not showing great leadership for bringing this to the floor and lasting 11 rounds and not being able to take those weeks after the election verdict and do something, because they say that part of being a leader is not having this happen.
Listen, that's fine, but there's an awful lot of Democrats who were along with Kevin McCarthy. Everyone thought this was going to be a cakewalk. Everyone thought that this was going to happen They were making some mutterings here or there, but they wouldn't dare, paralyze the government of the United States of America. But yeah, the fact of the matter is they have dared, and I fear that the hubris is the goal. It's not just the tactic. It's also the goal, just to disrupt, to delay, to distract. And I think it's really pathetic.
Well, when are you coming back for the five?
Next week. I'm going to do 4 days in a row the end of next week and the other side of the MLK weekend and then the end of the month. I'm an old man. I can't I can't be. After the experience I had over the holidays getting a teenager from Tampa back to Cleveland, I don't want to travel so much.
Oh, she was stuck?
Yeah, stuck Southwest. Yeah. It was bad. Can I say one thing off topic? These Idaho murders. I love the cops. They've done a great job. They tracked them down. They got the DNA. But I think that there's going to be questions about what happened in that murder house after the confrontation with the eyewitness at 4 a.m. approximately. How come they didn't call the cops until noontime?
Great.
How come did they fall back asleep? What happened? What is the explanation for the survivors in that house not calling the cops for so long? I think that's a question that defense attorneys are going to be looking at.
I had one of the dads on today, and I debated on that question to him, but I don't want to create a rivalry between somebody in that house after all the tragedy. But I think it's going to be front and center soon, because we're going to be debating this question for a while. This trial is going to be out there. And this guy, just real quick, you sat down with Manson and so many other people in prison. Does this guy look to you, first blush? I know everyone's got a right to a fair trial. Does he look like a killer to you?
Absolutely. He looked like a killer. He meets the description. To me, I look at him and I say, this is the kind of guy that killed his mother.
Wow, because, up until this moment, this guy was going for his PhD at a prestigious university. So he was fooling a lot of people for a long time, perhaps.
We'll see. He could be that clever. He certainly used his knowledge of criminology to try to cover his tracks. But he didn't count on is the dogged nature of cops when pressed, and the indelible proof offered by DNA. If your crap is on the knife scabbard, and it's also, they got him. They got him. They got the DNA. I just want to know how they didn't get him at 4 in the morning.
Got it. Geraldo, always great. I look forward to seeing you next week.
Okay, Brian, see you next week, buddy.
All right. He's Geraldo Rivera. When we come back, your turn, 1-866-408-7669. We're waiting, I guess, within 2 hours. We're going to go back to voting. I think things are going to break today. What do you think? Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Shannon Bream will bring us insight what's going on from the Capitol Hill perspective about the quest to get a speaker. And I think even Democrats are starting to say this is getting bad because I can't gavel in. I can't get to my office. I can't get my health insurance. I can't get an agenda, even though I'm in the minority. Mike, who's on WNDB in Daytona, Florida. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'd like to provide the other side, Brian. I'm a conservative Republican out here, John Q. Public, and I love what they're doing. And I think at the end of it all, you're going to love what they're doing. Geraldo is, Mark Levin, Mark Thiessen, all you talking heads are going to like the fact that we're moving toward term limits and a balanced budget. But, Brian, I got a question for you. I saw where McCarthy has agreed that any one person in the House can challenge him to like a confidence vote. I want to know, Brian, and maybe you can find this out. If they do that, how many votes does McCarthy have to get to stay in? I think it's going to be a simple majority. I don't think he's going to have to go through what he's going through right now.
Right. The great point. And this is how we think alike.
I texted Chad Pergram this morning at about 5, and he wrote me back, and you know he's our expert. He said, simple majority, but depends on how they write it. So there might be something in there that says, you know, that makes it harder. But, you know, he's got to do something pretty extreme to get kicked out. So sign an omnibus bill, which he's never going to do. You know, one of the things said, come up with a border, a plan for enforcing the border. Do you think for a second Kevin McCarthy would be against coming up with a plan for the border? And do you think he'd be against balancing the budget? Come up with it. They have a finance committee. Come up with an idea. Are you saying that you want Kevin McCarthy to make sure to sign off on it? Okay. Make him make sure that you think he's against balancing the budget? Show me a plan. As a speaker, you're not really drawing up those plans. That's supposed to, in theory, come out of committee. So the things, I just have a problem with the things they're complaining about. And you're not getting a guy from Mars that just got elected. He's been around. And as minority leader, if you were that disappointed, I don't never knew about it until they got the majority. And it was pretty clear that he was going to be speaker. Everybody knew he was going to be speaker. The bigger question was, Hakeem Jeffries, would Nancy Pelosi step aside? That seems to be very simple. But I appreciate your point, Mike. Always great.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And here's the thing also, which is the huge irony of this whole situation. The reason this House majority is so small is because we nominated too many candidates like Gates around the country. We nominated too many extreme candidates, and voters didn't endorse Joe Biden. They rejected a lot of Republicans because we chose badly. And because so many of those candidates lost, we have this small minority, small majority, which now empowers the same people who got rejected at the polls to the same lunatics to run the asylum.
And that's an exasperated Mark Thiessen. And you can't even say, and this is what people should keep in mind. People love to be counter-institutionalists. I understand it. We want to go in there. We want to go in there. We want to turn the table over. We want to flip the chairs. And we want to change things to make it more efficient. Just so you know, you're going against Donald Trump, who actually started this whole thing. So you can't even say, well, X, Y, and Z, Brian Kilmeade, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, those guys are just anti-Trump. No, they're pro-McCarthy. Not really. Paul Ryan, I thought, did damage to the Republicans when he said, I'm quitting, just not for 2 years. So then he was basically not unmotivated and checked out. And Kevin McCarthy did all the work. Kevin McCarthy did all the fundraising. Kevin McCarthy did all the leadership training. Kevin McCarthy says, okay. And then sure enough, they lost the House as expected. Most people do, as Joe Biden just did. And they went to minority. And then for 2 years, he almost came and took it back 2 years ago. And he took it back this time. Not that he deserves it, but if you had a major problem, I would have heard about it. I knew there were some people that would vote against him always, but you would have heard about it. I just find that people are getting off having the power to make the cameras come on and the attention come in. And this guy, Congressman Good, is raising money, as is Congressman Gates. Shannon Bream joins me right now. Shannon, I'm astounded. You know, I'm used to red and blue fights, and I'm used to disagreements among Trumpers and non-Trumpers. I'm not used to this.
Well, listen, you better get a Snickers, because the longest it ever took was 44 ballots. We're only about to go into 12 today, and who knows how many of these we're going to go through today.
But aren't we talking about 1850?
Yeah. It's been over a century, but this vote has made a lot of history already. So I think we're all praying we don't get to 44. They hit 12 at 12 o'clock Eastern today. And have they made enough progress overnight? I mean, I've talked to folks who were part of these conversations who say they feel like there's a big chunk of that 20 to 21 who have not been voting for McCarthy who's ready to move. They want to really pin down the details. But, you know, we've got this handful that say no matter what he concedes to them or promises him, they don't trust him and they will never vote for him. So he's got no margin for error here.
By the way, I'm just seeing this now on a separate note. Damar Hamlin FaceTimed into the team,
yes,
Bill's team meeting today. He got the breathing tube out. Yesterday he was able to write, and they said that they said that they don't see any nerve damage right now. So it's pretty amazing.
It is. You know me. I'm a person of faith. I believe in the power of prayer, and he's been getting prayers from all over the world pouring in. He's had an excellent medical team. People who did all the right things were told from the very moment that he collapsed. So I think there are so many good things working in his favor. He's a young guy. He's, you know, a professional athlete. But I love to see how this has kind of brought people together. They don't care about party or anything else. Like, people are pulling for this young man, and it's a beautiful thing to see.
I'll take another step. It's not even football fans. It's not, right? It's not even saying, exactly. Oh, Cincinnati Bengals, their opponent. No, it's not even football. Okay, that's a big deal. All football. The biggest names all commenting, fine. But now the whole country, so people who never watched a down of football,
right,
are saying, well, I'm pulling for this guy. I can't believe this happened. And, you know, on Saturday, we're going to have the family on that may have experienced the same thing that that he experienced when he evidently got hit in the chest. This is preliminary, at in between beats at exactly the wrong time that sent him into cardiac arrest. It happened to a 14-year-old lacrosse goalie when he got hit in the chest with a ball. Unfortunately, no one knew what happened and what was happening, and he passed away, but they've made it their quest to find out what happened. And since that time, there's defibrillators on every sideline, big game, small game, big baseball, football, wherever parks you go to. And obviously, they were there with the number one game in the country, the most well-financed, profitable game. They had the best doctors on board. And they don't have a single game without an emergency, without a hospital, ready to accept any player who gets hurt on the field. So they hit it. They were all ready to go, mainly because of this family and what they experienced in 1997.
Yeah, and it's beautiful to see how there can be silver linings and benefits from such tragic things that, you know, people pay it forward, whether it's looking for a cure or making sure that another situation doesn't repeat the way that it did before. For one family's tragedy can be a beautiful thing for other people. And I think, too, this points to what we think is the best of sports, what it can do for us, that it distracts you from your own fights and worries and Twitter battles and everything else. Like you said, this is outside of football fans, too. This is the highest calling, the best, I think, of what we see in sports, in that it can take us away from our own selves, our own, you know, fights and everything else, to say, hey, we are pulling for this young man. Everybody is on his side. Everybody is cheering for his recovery. And it kind of brings out the best in people, which I think is what people want sports to be more about, that less about politics and a division, and more about unity and rising above.
Yeah, I would think so, too, because for the longest time, the only time we talked sports for people that didn't care about sports was because people were kneeling during the national anthem. And then we talked about, well, you don't understand, you know, whether it's Kaepernick or something else. You don't understand the black experience, the white experience. You don't understand what it's like to be a player but be rich but not be respected. And we're getting deep into things we never thought we were going to get into, and we're asking athletes to comment on it. This time, something organically happened short of tragedy, but certainly calamity. And then people rally around it and did something I never thought I'd see possible outside some type of terror attack, and that is stopping a game. And they're just going to, and what they're going to do is fascinating. I think they're just not going to play it. And when it comes down to seeding the teams to see who the best and the worst is in terms of who makes the playoffs, they might play it at a neutral site, knowing it's inherently unfair. Here's Josh Allen yesterday, the outstanding quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, cut 30.
Mario talking to us as a team.
That's the
and
father.
And the things that he kind of told us, and really didn't tell us, he demanded us. You know, and you can't not honor his request to go out there and charge forward, you know, to the best of our abilities. And obviously we'll be playing with, I guess, less heavy hearts now, knowing that, you know, today's news was a lot of tears of joy, I'll tell you that. But to know that, That's what he wants. That's what his dad wants. I think guys are excited to get out there.
And then that was yesterday when it turns out that he wrote that, did we win? And then today, just while we're talking, finding out he FaceTimed into the Bills locker room. So they're going to play the Patriots this weekend. A lot of people, I think, are going to be very relieved to think that he's actually talking. And who knows, at 24 years old, if anyone can recover, it could be an elite athlete at 24 like he is, and maybe walking around a hospital. So, Shannon, in the big picture, I'm optimistic something's going to happen today just by reading between the lines and texting with people. What are you hearing about being the speaker race?
Well, like I said, I've heard from people who feel like there was movement overnight, that there were some concessions and things that really they wanted nailed down. They want them on paper. They want solid commitments. But that a chunk of that 20 to 21 who have not been voting for McCarthy are moving. But you have that handful that says never going to move, no matter what. And that presents the real problem for him. I think he has to show some kind of progress, some kind of momentum today. Even if he doesn't get to the 218, I think he's got to show that he's actually moving in that direction. And so we'll see. We start again at 12, but there are some people who will never come to him. So can he move enough people with promises for things that they want to see?
How does it look? Some people say this is the worst basic embarrassment. Other people say this is democracy in action.
Right.
How does it look, Shannon?
Listen, I think we're way farther inside of it than the average American has no idea this is actually happening. And I don't think that they're going to be very concerned. But there are those who say, listen, you can't get anything done on the Hill unless these people are sworn in and can actually start doing something. I think in 6 months we will have forgotten about it because everybody's memories are so short, especially when it comes to politics. But there are genuine conversations happening here in Washington about, okay, what is the plan B? Is it Scalise? Is it Jordan? Could they get people, 218 of them, to coalesce? They're having those conversations because without some progress today, they've got to start seriously thinking about other options.
So here is Congresswoman Maria Elvira Salazar with Neil Cavuto yesterday. And this is one of the reasons why I'm optimistic as I heard this. Cut six.
I'm sure that within the next 24 hours, something is going to happen. I've been, as a good journalist, you know, I did this for 35 years. I miss it. I have been talking to everyone, including the 20 holdouts. And I'm saying, hey, what is it that you know that I don't? And I hear that within the next 24 hours, something is going to happen.
So that's 24 hours. That would be now. And I don't think people want to give up their weekends. Also, Shannon, do you know, I mean, Brett was briefing me a little bit, so was Chad, about what is not getting done and what is not allowed to happen because there really is no House right now?
I mean, right now some of it's wonky because this would be when they get a speaker, everybody gets to get sworn in. That's not happening yet. But it would be about committee assignments, subcommittee assignments, that kind of stuff. But we're getting close to the cliff where you're not going to actually have a functioning Congress if you don't get people sworn in. They're not yet to, you know, hashing out legislation. That would be another couple of weeks down the road. But just the basic functioning is not happening right now. Now, some people say, great, that's exactly what we want to do. That's why we are kind of the fly in the ointment to get this thing done and to make sure that our voices are heard at the table. But, you know, a lot of it is just procedural at this point, but you're getting very dangerously close to where you're going to be beyond procedure and you're actually going to be, you know, getting to real life things. And speaking of real life, there are members here. One of them, his mother died this week. He wants to go home to her funeral tomorrow. One whose wife has a brand new baby. He'd like to get home. Others have, you know, real health issues and loved ones with health issues. This is impacting everybody, but not one person can leave Washington because every single one of these votes on both sides of the aisle is critical.
Have you? I know you watch the show Saturday night at 8 and then my repeat at 11, One Nation.
I love it.
Right. Now, how does that get you ready for your show? And have you picked out guests that you want to share with our audience?
I don't watch a repeat at 11 only because I'm supposed to be sleeping at that point. Oh. The 8 is solid and it's show prep and has to happen. So, you know, we're not moving off of that. I don't care if I get invited to the White House or to Brett Baer's house, whatever it is. I'm not going at 8 o'clock unless they're going to be playing you when I get there. And sometimes at the White House that happens.
What's nicer, Brett Baer's house or the White House?
Listen, Brett Baer would definitely be playing you, but sometimes the White House is playing you, too. They got to know what's going on in the world.
Exactly.
And that's why you watch Kill Me on Saturday night. We've got Jim Jordan with us exclusively on Sunday. So, listen, he is one of the names that's being floated here in Washington that could possibly coalesce these groups. Is he Speaker Jordan by Sunday? I don't know. You're going to have to tune in and find out. But we're also going to talk to him about all these investigations that the House GOP is planning. Is that going to be a net positive or negative when people are dealing with inflation and all this other stuff? Do they care about Hunter Biden and all these other things that Republicans said they're going to investigate? So we'll talk to him about that. And, of course, we've got folks at the border with the president finally getting down there on Sunday, and we'll hash that out, too.
Incredible. A lot going on. It'll just be great. It'll be great to watch your show and find out the latest. Shannon Bream, thanks so much. You are the host of Fox News Sunday.
I'll see you Saturday night and then on Sunday. And guess who's joining me on the panel Sunday? The one and only Janice Dean.
Oh, my goodness. That's going to be great. She could do it all. She's fresh off from her bull riding expedition to Madison Square Garden.
Right. You've stiff-armed us, but we're still trying to get you on the panel, so we'll keep negotiating with your people.
I was on your panel. I just wasn't in person.
We need you in person. Stat.
Shannon, thank you.
Bye.
When we come back, the lines are jammed. I'm going to go to you guys. I know you have a lot to say. And many of you disagree with me, and that's fine. Makes it a better show. Brian Kilmeade.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. Let's go right to the phones. Robin listening in Jacksonville, WOKV. Hey, Robin.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Great. What's on your mind?
Oh, Matt Gaetz. What else? He's infuriated me. He's trying to raise money off of this.
He is. I got the email this morning.
I got a couple of them yesterday, and I got a text, probably because I supported him before. While I'm not in his area, I kind of do that with various candidates around the country as opposed to handing money over to the RNC. But I'm so disappointed. I was okay with it the first day. I was thinking, all right, big protest voice. But now I just think it's past the point of ridiculousness. And I really hope somebody primaries against him when he runs for office again. And I guess he's starting yesterday trying to collect money. But I don't find his antics or Bobart, any of them, helpful in any way. And if I was a person who was just elected into that body for the first time, I'd be knocking on his door every day.
I know, but yeah, Robin, a lot of people, this guy is making money off it, believe it or not. And he's never going to vote for him. What they want to do is get him to vote present, I guess. So, and by the way, he has all these statements where Kevin McCarthy's owned, bought and sold from the special interest groups. Why was he okay to be a minority leader if that was the case? And nobody was complaining. And I don't know that to be the case. But when you are a leader of a party, you do have to talk to corporate America. You still are being outraised in every market in the country by every Democratic candidate in the country. So you do have to talk to lobbyists, no doubt about it. Brooke listening in Oklahoma. Hey, Brooke.
It's actually Brock. But anyway, my question is these 21 people that aren't voting for the anointed one, what makes their voice invalid? Are we just supposed to get in line and shut our mouth and vote for the establishment? Point is, it's working exactly as our forefathers designed. It's a glorious day. It's fantastic. We're actually having debate on the House floor. Bottom line is,
there's no debate. There's no debate.
No, but yeah, there is. Yes, there is.
No, a bunch of speeches.
We're finding out about it. But the point is, McCarthy doesn't have the votes. Why is he putting us through this? Oh, and one other thing, too. The red wave didn't happen because of the RNC leadership.
You know, that's what a lot of people think. There should be change. There's a lot of theories out there. Number one is abortion. I think Trump was right over the weekend last week. When he came out and said, listen, Roe v. Wade is something every conservative wanted to do. They finally overturned it, and they ran and hid. They didn't have a message for it, and it resonated with a lot of young people, and it brought a lot of people out, and that was the rebalancer. But guess who delivered the House? Kevin McCarthy. And guess who has over 200 votes? Kevin McCarthy. Nobody else has him. If he stepped aside, would Scalise get it? Maybe. But there's no difference between the two. They have different approaches, but they have the same beliefs, and they'll all have to sacrifice a lot of their conservative views for moderate Republicans with a slim majority. And then the other one would be Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan legitimately doesn't want anything to do with it, Brock. He'll be on with Shannon this weekend. Mike, Fox News Radio, Glendora, California. Mike.
Good morning, Brian. You're still not in L.A. On a radio station. That's bad. I want to find out, are these rules changes going to be binding past the Republican Congress? And how many votes is it going to take before you put your name into the till?
Next one, I will be Speaker. And I'm going to make my move, Mike. And as long as I have your support, I'll have an L.A. station sooner than you know it. Thanks so much. Mike, listen to the Fox News Radio app, and I appreciate that loyalty. Keep it here. Don't forget, One Nation, which I'm hosting, 8 o'clock Saturday Eastern time. Brian Kilmeade Show, 5 o'clock on the West Coast time. Huge roster and some breaking news along with it. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hey.
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Don't miss a minute of this hour because Ian Bremmer's here in person. I would touch him, but he'd rather I don't. Fox Nation streaming it. You'll see him there. One of the smartest people you ever know about foreign and domestic policy. And give us a real perspective getting into 2023. We'll also take your calls. And we also just got to remind you, too, don't forget our big show, One Nation, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, repeated at 11. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Here we go. Biden's border plan, a step in the right direction, but not the cure for the border, which he broke. Days from his first ever visit to the border, he's going to go to El Paso. We'll discuss what could take place.
Number two.
Number two, mystery solved. Details of the murders of four University of Idaho students was revealed in the courtroom yesterday. A 28-year-old suspect. Man, that case is strong. The details are stunning, gory, but still questions remain.
Number one.
Mark Thiessen said it best. What is the Republicans doing? But talking about going with the speaker race. There is, seems to be, a breakthrough. That's the word from Kevin McCarthy's office after 11 unsuccessful rounds of votes in his quest to become speaker. The latest details are coming your way because we're going to have a vote in about 48 minutes. Ian Bremmer is president of Eurasia Group and author of The Power of Crisis, How Three Threats and Our Response Will Change the World. Ian, welcome back.
Brian, happy new year, man.
Good same to you. First off, you told me, put it in perspective, this whole speakers thing, not that big of a deal long term.
Yeah, I mean, the big deal is the fact that the Republicans have an incredibly narrow majority in the House, and that makes it hard to govern. It makes any speaker really, really weak, whether it ends up being McCarthy or Scalise or whoever, right? But I don't think that – I mean, there's no legislation that's going to get passed that's significant irrespective of whatever speaker. And once you finally get one, whether it's 12 votes or it's 24 – a week later, a month later, no one's talking about the story.
Are you worried from the holistically we're weakening the position so much?
No, not particularly, because I also think that if it turns out that the Republicans have a speaker and then they pick up seats come 2024, then they're going to have a much stronger speaker. The issue is fundamentally about just how much the red wave didn't happen in the midterms. That's a challenge.
Why do you think it was?
On balance, I think it's because it's two things. One, I think the abortion issue played very significantly for a lot of people. The country is a bell curve on abortion, and a lot of Republicans got squeezed into a position that was unpopular. That was challenging in a lot of races. Secondly, I think there was a quality of candidate issue and people that were really seen to be incompetent. And unfortunately, the Republicans ran a fair number of them just underperformed structurally. But it could have so easily gone the other way. The Republicans could have easily had 20 or 30 seats in this majority, and then there wouldn't have been a second vote. This all would have been smooth.
Right.
So I mean, it's very easy to it's people need to recognize how close the alternative was.
So in the big picture, you said don't panic. But overall, if you have that combined with the fact that it's January 6th and every Democrat's on the steps saying that party created chaos on the 6th and now they can't even pick a speaker in the one chamber in which they have the majority, not a great look for Republicans.
Oh, that's true. That's absolutely true. But I think the broader picture is what matters for America and American power internationally is not whether the Republicans or Democrats happen to control one of the houses by a few seats. It's the fact that 2024, there's no likelihood of a constitutional crisis. When January 6th actually occurred, and it was an embarrassment, but it wasn't a coup, and it wasn't a possible coup, because the Republicans that Trump called saying, find me votes, they said no, because they weren't loyal to the individual of the president.
Even
they
were his vice president said no.
His vice president said no. His attorney general said no. The Supreme Court said no. The military said no. Everyone said no. Very much like what we just saw in Brazil last week, when you also had a former president now hanging out with Trump in Mar-a-Lago, and he's like, oh, I'm not going to concede. It was stolen, all this stuff. And the reality is you've had a peaceful transfer of power. These are democracies. And these democracies turn out that they're much more powerful and entrenched than people had worried. right? And that's what really matters. The fact that the United States, we're not going anywhere. Our country is not about to implode. Our democracy is not about to fall
apart. Brazil is not one of your top 10, but
it's
not. But you have to be concerned about Central and South America and some of these socialist communist countries that are infiltrating. If you look at what happened with Venezuela and how it's been destroyed, I think the role of Nicaragua has never changed. And then Brazil basically has a socialist criminal as a president.
Yeah, I'm much less concerned about Brazil than I am the other countries.
Really? Doesn't he want to do deals with China and further China's claws into this hemisphere?
Bolsonaro supposedly didn't want to do deals with China and then, of course, had to because they're the largest trading partner. Lula is going to be just as pragmatic. His cabinet has a bunch of different parties on it because the only way he can govern is by compromising with people.
So you're not worried?
Not at all. Not at all. You know, I'm worried about Haiti. Right, we've got a criminal like country that has no government, that's run by gangs, with a cholera epidemic and massive numbers of refugees, literally just hundreds of miles, you know, from the U.S. southern coast, and the U.S. is doing nothing about it.
So you've set up an unbelievable list of the greatest dangers, the greatest challenges, points of interest. First off, number 10, you say water stress. Are we running out of water?
Globally, water is increasingly not a crisis that we suddenly have to respond to when it hits, but it's a structural reality that whether it's in the United States with droughts and farmers having to produce less so that consumers can have access, or it's Europe and it's impacting shipping and waterways, or it's countries where literally they don't have enough water to actually, you know, survive, this is a massive and only growing structural issue. And we talk about the big summits every year on carbon emissions. We talk about the big summits on biodiversity. There are summits on water. They accomplish nothing and they make no news. Right. So we thought it was really important to actually put it on the list.
Well, that's interesting because I did read some people thought the next war was going to be over water.
Yeah.
Number 9, and this is huge, gets my daughter's attention, the TikTok boom.
Yeah.
Is at one point this year, is there going to be a banning of TikTok from everybody's phone or just government phones?
Just government phones. But I also think that there's going to be a difference in how we think about the TikTok generation. These young people increasingly really believe that the way that they can get things changed is not by voting but by directly protesting. In a way that we've not seen, frankly, in generations. And that's very impactful, especially given the social media access that they have, given the ability to directly deliver their messages to people.
So they use it as an organizer.
Absolutely.
But why would that be any different than Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook in order to organize events?
Oh, no, it's not. It's the same. We use TikTok boom just because they're young. Exactly.
But TikTok in particular, do you think is
– It's the most popular.
It's
right?
The most popular.
It's the most popular, yeah.
And, you know, we watched – Barack Obama sit down with an influencer and Joe Biden do an influencer before the election because most young people are on TikTok. It is their number one site. Are you legitimately concerned about being a spying tool of China?
I'm legitimately concerned that China has access to that data if they want it. And the fact that they can aggregate it, they can surveil it. And we, of course, don't have reciprocal access to Chinese data. I wouldn't be as worried if Facebook and Google and Twitter were in China, right? Because then we'd have mutually assured interdependence. But the fact that they refuse to give us that access, but they have no problem scooping up that data in the U.S., yeah, I have a problem with that.
And how about the fact that it's dramatically different in China than it is here?
Of course.
It's an educational tool that shuts off at 11?
Oh, and it's much more heavily censored, of course. And same way that they cut off all their video games. I mean, if you're under 18, you get 2 hours, you can use video games, and then that's it.
Right.
Right. I know a lot of American parents that would love to implement that here.
Right. But that in a free society, that's a slippery slope.
No, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, Ian, I'm going to see as far as I can get. But now we can do two segments. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to cut this off in a little while. But next one, you said you're less concerned about divided United States now. You think the midterm election was a good sign? In what respect?
In the sense that the would-be election deniers that were running in campaigns that they would have direct oversight of 2024. So I'm talking about secretaries of state, governors, they lost their races. So this risk is not at all about Senate or House. It's about, was there any chance of a constitutional crisis in 2024? Might the election be broken? And the answer is no. The answer is no. That's a very strong signal to send to American allies around the world. You're not going to see the United States suddenly break inwardly.
Was there real worry?
There was a growing worry. I think January 6th was a real issue. The fact that a majority of Republicans in the House even that evening decided to vote against certifying the election was a real issue. The fact that a majority of Trump supporters say that they believe that the election was actually stolen was a real issue. I think that did damage the United States and its credibility internationally.
Don't you think it's to our national interest to tighten up state by state election rules?
Sure, absolutely.
Do you believe that can we agree as a country? Because the polls say we should, and voter ID.
Yeah.
And so start to reassure people in every state, as blue or red as it is, you're not going to tell Oregon to start voting differently. That's not something we do. Evidently, they're all right in, correct?
No, I think voter ID is a great idea. I also think having a day off on Election Day is a great idea. I think making it easy for people to vote in places where you don't have lots of what's hard to transport and the rest, that's a great idea. We need to make elections secure, and we need to make it trivial.
Is there a downside to having election season as opposed to election day?
There is,
because now we're backing it up so much.
There's a real downside to having 2 years of elections. There's a downside to having billions and billions of dollars spent on campaigns that start after midterms. That is the most dysfunctional election system among any major democracy in the world, is in the United States.
As I get Matt Gaetz's email, he's raising money off his off blocking McCarthy.
That's what he's doing. That's what they're all doing. They all understand that this is about celebrity. I just found that John Bolton is going to run for president. Why? Because it's going to help his book sales. His, right. I think his mustache
is going to
run for vice president.
You don't think he's going to win?
Oh, yeah, absolutely he's going to win. You and I are going to like be out there campaigning for
him.
And
I liked him. I know he's smart, but he's alienated everyone on the right, and everyone on the left always hated him.
I think for every American citizen for whom the North Korea issue is the single most important issue, they'll be out there voting for John Bolton.
Listen, Ian Bremmer's going to be here. We're going to make our way through the top 10 list. We'll pick up the pace because there's a lot of lists on this list. Republicans and Democrats will and shown they agree on. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. We got it. I don't know how I can afford it, but I guess we're just going to use the overdraft on our checking account. But Eurasia Group President, founder, Ian Bremmer, still here to go through the top risks of 2023 and everything else that we stumble onto along the way. When we last left off, we were, I don't want to give it away what number one is, but we have to make some tremendous progress. We talk about divided states of America. You felt good about the last election. The arrested global development. You're worried about the world's GDP after COVID-19?
You're worried about, for 50 years with globalization, yes, you definitely had problems with the working and the middle classes in wealthy countries. But the fact is you created a global middle class.
Because manufacturing left.
Manufacturing left. But the average human being on the planet was doing better. For 50 years, right, you were taking people out of poverty. The last 3 years, that's actually not true on any metric. Far more people in poverty, far more people out of school, far more women being forced in the formal economy, a lot more refugees. And it's the combination of the pandemic, the Russian invasion, and now this really high inflation, all the supply chain challenges. You put that together, the poorest people in the world are doing much, much worse.
This is huge. Number six is the energy crunch, because people are under the impression that we can build enough windmills, we're going to be fine. And we have this transition to the green economy, which I still think is a theory. Energy crunch, where are we at? Because there's a big pushback on fossil fuels, period, in many cases.
Yeah, so the funny thing is the biggest challenges here are not to the United States. They're to the Europeans and they're to developing countries who are paying far more for energy. In the case of the poorer countries,
always
can't
have.
Afford it. Absolutely. But when you add to that that you're suddenly cutting off, for 20 years, they were happy to get really cheap energy from Russia. And it turned out that was a huge mistake from a national security perspective. So now they've cut it all off in 1 year. The prices are going to be structurally higher as a consequence.
But one thing that we brought up yesterday, stunningly, a place like Germany has done a great job stockpiling, realizing not only don't you have Nord Stream 2 from Russia, you don't have Nord Stream 1
yep.
from Russia.
That's right.
So they've done an effective job. Have other European Western countries done a a good job, start getting it from elsewhere. And long term, this is a good move.
The Germans have had a lot more money, and they've been a lot more focused, more disciplined than the other European countries have. And France, of course, gets most of their energy from nuclear, so it's less of a problem for them. Other countries are under more stress. But here's the issue, is that last year, they were able to seriously stockpile when, for the first half of the year, they had Russian energy coming in. This year, they don't have Russian energy coming in. So sure. Even though they're in great shape for this winter, next year they're starting behind the eight ball. It's a lot harder. So next winter is going to look a lot worse for them.
Don't you think we should be doing more here and getting those terminals built on natural gas, which burns clean, obviously? Don't you think that there's an opportunity for us to be be a great supplier and then be a great customer of America?
Just earlier this week, the Germans got the first shipments of LNG directly from the United States. The U.S. should lean into that. You've got a whole bunch of companies, particularly in Germany, like BASF and Volkswagen, that realize they can't manufacture in Europe anymore. It's too expensive. A lot of those companies will move to the United States, to Mexico. Well, this is a big advantage for the U.S.
When are we going to realize that solar panels and windmills are not going to replace fossil fuels?
Coal certainly is being phased out very quickly, especially among wealthy countries, and that's a very useful thing to do. Natural gas and oil are transition fossil fuels that we are going to need, and we're going to need further investment in them for decades. And as that occurs, renewables will be a bigger piece of the pie. That's where the country needs to go.
Rapid fire. Iran in a corner. You just informed me the protests are just as big as they have been, starting with the murder of this woman because she was not wearing proper headgear.
That's right. And not only are the demonstrations only being met by repression, at the same time, there's no chance of a nuclear deal. The Americans no way are going to give that kind of a benefit to a country doing that at home. And the Iranians are Russia's best friend. They're giving them the drones. They're selling them ballistic missiles. Iran, the likelihood of military confrontation with Iran in the Middle East is growing.
Inflation shockwaves, obviously getting a hold of that. America's still reeling. We got spoiled, but it's not coming down. It's not transitory. Weapons of mass disruption is important. But let's go to one and two. Number one threat, number two threat is China. Number one is Russia. Start with China.
We can put them together because in both cases, we're talking about individual leaders that have amassed an enormous amount of power in their country, surrounding themselves with yes men, with no checks and balances, nothing like an American president, and making really big mistakes. With China, it was zero COVID, and then suddenly maximum COVID 2 weeks later.
They're dying at a rate where they're burning bodies in their backyards.
Only 25 have died officially,
according to
China. And they're the epicenter of global COVID once again.
While nationalizing businesses.
And they're not going to tell us a damn thing about how many people are getting it or about any new variants that are coming. It's an enormous danger for the world, and their ability to make those kind of mistakes also, as you just mentioned, in the business platforms and technology are massive. Putin's already made those mistakes in the last year.
Yeah, obviously wants this move back the last 8 months. He's been exposed to have a hollow army where their generals are killed first and their soldiers don't want to fight.
That's right. And they can't win on the ground in Ukraine. They increasingly can't even win in the air in Ukraine as the Patriot systems start coming, and that's going to make it more clear, which means that other than surrender – the only thing Putin can do is increasingly take the war beyond Ukraine, take it to NATO. And that's a danger. The asymmetric attacks that you see from Iran in the Middle East, the drone strikes, for example, the espionage, the proxy wars. That's what I think you increasingly see from Russia.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you are now briefed on the top risks of 2023, as Ian Bremmer calls it. And I agree from the Eurasia Group. Ian, thanks so much.
Brian, always good to see you, man.
All right. How do we subscribe?
You get in touch with us at eurasiagroup.net. You can check it out.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He went down initially and he had a pulse. He lost the pulse. They started doing CPR immediately, we were told. And then after a cycle of CPR, he got defibrillated, was taken to the ambulance where he got intubated and taken to the hospital. Right now, the biggest challenge, they say, or a big challenge, is his lungs. He has a condition called ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome, where you have inflammation in the lungs following an event like this. And that's why he's still on the breathing tube. He's not talking because he has that tube that goes past his vocal cords, but he's writing on the pad and he's nodding his head yes or no. So things are looking good.
So that was Dr. John LaPook breaking it down well in another network about what exactly Damar Hamlin went through at the 24-year-old when he went down. So we found out some bad information, that he had cardiac arrest twice, his heart stopped beating. And what it was is essentially fluttering. And they went just looking at him and seeing the player's reaction to how serious it was. The game gets canceled. Never saw that before. The NFL stops. So the world stops. And everyone's focusing on this. People that never saw a down of football, I think it's significant. Since that time, some unbelievably great news. Yesterday we found out, as he came out of a coma, it was drug-induced coma to get his body relaxed and to keep it iced to try to freeze any neurological damage that might have taken place when his heart went into arrest. It turns out, with a tube down his throat, he wrote down, "Did we win?" And then we found out about an hour ago, he addressed his team with the tube out of his throat. He addressed his team via FaceTime, the Buffalo Bills. So they're going to play the Patriots this weekend. We're going to have a full slate of games. They're going to change it just a little bit. But I thought what was so significant about what happened is that so many people, I know it's the most popular sport and everybody watches football and you always go for the Super Bowl. I get it. But everyone stopped because they couldn't believe how instinctively people rallied around together to come together to comment on this, because the more you looked into it, a 24-year-old in the prime of his life and a normal tackle that you might even see in a college or high school, to him go down like that, you realize why these men get paid so much. The average career is a year and a half, in the NFL. This 24-year-old from the University of Pittsburgh, he gets drafted in the sixth round. Most guys get cut in the sixth round, or they're serviceable, might move around. He's starting in a year and a half. By almost all accounts, he's just this great, great young individual who wanted to go to the University of Pittsburgh. You know why? Because he wanted to be closer to his family. He had, where he grew up, he had offers from bigger schools and bigger programs. But no, I'm going to stay around here. And it obviously didn't stop him from starring on one of the best defenses in the league. And now we found out he's come all the way back. And T. Higgins, who hit him, weighed in yesterday about the fact that some people believe, you know, the hit caused it. And when you're involved in a collision, whether it's a fight in a boxing match and the other guy dies, like when Ray Mancini fought Duck Coup Kim all those years ago, dies in the ring tragically, never the intent. Your intent is to win. But he stayed within the rules. This is what he said when he found out that Damar was doing better. Cut 31.
Obviously, it's been hard, you know, just because, you know, I had something to do with the play and whatnot. But, you know, everybody's been making me feel whole again. You know, I talked to his mom, and, you know, everything is okay. He's doing good, so I'm in a good place right now.
How uplifting is that with his mom?
You know, it was just telling me that she's thinking of me, praying for me, and things like that. That she's telling me that he's okay, and just all the good, positive stuff.
We're 25 minutes away from the first vote of the day, and I told you I am optimistic that things have been done, that both sides seem to have given, and more McCarthy given, and I think we're going to get a vote shortly, and I'll bring that to you. And I'm about to go to the phones, but before we do, I just think it's also important to bring up, too, that a time in which I was always on here talking about who's kneeling today, the black national anthem, the white national anthem, we got to change our national anthem at football games, women's national soccer team kneeling during the national anthem on international contests, making rules to make sure Olympians don't do that, sponsors deciding to bow out or bow in, depending on who the rebel was out there to talk about the inequities of America, the rise of the 1619 Project, and their belief that we're inherently built on slavery and we're forever going to be racist. That's all gone. You have a black player, white players coming together, talking about it, rallying around. You see one team coming together. You see white coaches and black coaches, and no one cares about the color of someone's skin. They have a commonality of purpose to compete, to win, but to have respect in a sportsmanlike way. And I think to see people come together on the same page, and I see it because on Fox and Friends, maybe a half the group is sports fans. The other half is when sports becomes news. I couldn't believe the myriad of questions at 11 o'clock at night, getting calls on Monday night saying, can you help out with Jason Chaffetz on his show because we've had this tragedy, which I was watching on Monday Night Football. I was able to chime in, talk to heart specialists, interviewing heart specialists during the day, talk about the dangers and challenges that may or may not exist in youth sports. So being able to talk about that and see it bleed on both sides, bleed into both sides in all conversations, I thought was heartening. All good. Can you imagine talking about sports in a good way, in a unifying way? Now, to something that's not unifying, the race for speaker. Ben, you're in Michigan. Hey, Ben.
Yeah, Brian. Hey, how you doing? Listen,
I'm even though I'm 71, Brian, I'm pretty new. I'm kind of new kid on the block when it comes to congressional procedures and whatnot. Spoke to a good friend of mine who's a lot more versed in it than I am. And also I heard you even present the same scenario earlier today that there is a, I guess, a small possibility that Jeffries could become the speaker. And the thing about that, if that does happen, I really think that's going to reflect upon the common individuals, the Republican side, where that's going to be reflected in the ballot boxes come 2024.
Absolutely.
Where they're just going to.
There's no way.
Say, you know,
let's not even entertain it. Ben. It's not going to happen. So what? For you said you're 71. You're kind of new to the political process. Do you think overall this is going to be good? And we just had Ian Bremmer on say, Brian, if they get a deal in the day, next day or two, no one's really going to even think much about this. Have a big picture, Ben. What does this mean?
Optic-wise, to me, I'm just telling you my anecdotally, to me, optic-wise, it's not a good thing. It's not good at all. And I don't know. I think there's going to be some blowback from it, to tell you the truth. I mean, I could be totally wrong about it, but I truly believe that there will be some blowback from it. So that's just my feelings about it.
I do. I feel the same way. When it comes to voting, absolutely. Do you think that Lauren Boebert's doing the right thing? You think that all these guys, 19 now, doing the right thing? I actually don't, because if you were dealing, it's hard enough getting legislation between Democrats and Republicans, but just to name a captain amongst Republicans, for that not to be done, I don't think it reflects good on McCarthy either, because how are you going to deal with Democrats when you can't even deal with your own caucus? That's a negative side. But he'd have my vote. He would have had it day one, and he has earned it. There's nothing wrong with saying I earned it. Let's go to Gunner in Oklahoma. Hey, Gunner.
Mr. Kilmeade.
Yeah.
So I had a take on the McCarthy issue. Honestly, I feel like the Republican and the Democrat Party are part of the uniparty, and I'm sure you've heard this before. But I'm 30 years old, and in my lifetime, I can't really recall any conservative legislation that's either been proposed or advanced. And with that said, yeah, McCarthy, he's a uniparty candidate.
I'll give you an example. I'll tell you right now. The tax reform that Trump put forward. First tax reforms of the 1980s.
Tax reform sounds wonderful, but you know this country didn't have even an income tax before 1930. So what happened to that? That's the conservative I want to talk about. I don't believe Ronald Reagan's a conservative. He's an actor. He was the governor of California, and he was a stooge of the CIA. I mean, we all talk about the Iran-Contra affair and all the stuff that he helped. So
I'm fascinated that you do not think Ronald Reagan's a conservative. That fascinates me. He started as a Democrat, no doubt about it. So did Leon Panetta start as a Democrat. I don't think he's leaning right. So to me, he's a conservative, but you got to make deals. Number one, I do think you need a tax base. Someone's got to pay for the roads. You know, I do think Social Security works. I know there's a huge pushback when it was offered, but I think you need it. So I do think there should be taxes, but I don't think it should be taking 60% of your paycheck. If you get local, state, city, federal, 60% to live in New York. That's why people are leaving. But I do think there should be taxes. Julie, FM News Talk 97.1. Julie.
Hey there. Hey, I have a positive take on this, and I assumed McCarthy would sail through. So I'm not in favor of one or the other, but it's going to have to play out. What I see as a positive is when we show the floor and the House Republicans, I see so many women and minorities sitting there looking like real people, dispelling the old myth that Republicans are a bunch of old guys in suits. So that, to me, is a positive, and they keep showing them over and over again. So I also think we need to just calm down a little bit. We're overreacting to hysteria and really disingenuous comments by Democrats saying how terrible this is. I'm with Ian Bremmer. I do think this is going to get worked out eventually, and maybe not even 2 days, but I think it will be eventually. Right. And I don't think this is going to mean that much in the big scheme of things.
All right. So, and you don't think it's a bad thing. Molly Hemingway agrees with you. Thanks for the call. Here's what she said last night to Brett. Cut 10.
A lot of this is about just democracy in action. That's what we're seeing. We see people going down and voting and debating. And this is generally a good thing. And it also is a lesson for the Republican Party, I think, in that you have these 20 members who do not have a majority, but they're showing how to wield power to accomplish their objectives. And their objectives, which were talked about last night on last night's show, are reasonable. They want some rules changes. They want some control of some committees. And these are the types of things that this is when they have the leverage. This is when they have the power. They're working those things out. And right now, as Trey just mentioned, they are in debates right now in consultation with Kevin McCarthy. And so people, I think, need to just calm down, let this happen.
Yeah, if it turns today in the big picture, but I also think there's going to be a learned situation that maybe do it more like Pelosi and just say, listen, we're going to settle this outdoors, even if it means waiting a week in order to have the debate. Because for some reason, I think that there was a belief that Kevin McCarthy, with all his years of experience, had thought when we go out to a roll call, they're definitely going to come my way. But I guess he misjudged. And that's the danger you have with Byron Donalds, who I think has got this huge upside. I think his star has risen. Everybody knows his name now. Cori Bush made him more famous by calling him basically an Uncle Tom. He's going to be a great leader, but he only has 2 years' experience. There's no way you can whip votes, get inside, find out where the leverage points are, and all these people, party, and factions. And even Kevin McCarthy, with all his experience, totally misjudged this. And that's where in the place we're in. We'll see what happens. And then once he gets in, then we'll see what kind of power he has from there. Hey, Benjamin, listening on KGNC. Hey, Benjamin, you're in Texas.
Yes, hey. Looks like to me that Kevin McCartney was a little bit on the lazy side. He didn't take care of business and make sure things were lined up. He should have anticipated it's never over till it's over.
Yeah, I wouldn't say lazy. I would think that he was thinking, number one, he thought he was going to have about a 25-seat lead win.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to worry if you lose seven.
He just doesn't seem to be very organized in what he does.
Could you say organized, or you could say yes. Not convincing? Because how are you going to get Matt Gaetz to change his mind? How are you going to get Lauren Boebert to change? You could say to him, listen, I'm going to bail you out, Lauren. You're in a runoff election, and right now we're in a recount. I'm going to give you some money. But listen, I got to vote in a couple of weeks. Just make sure you're on my side. He didn't do that. I don't know if that's a negative or not.
Well, why didn't he do that? Why didn't he go and try to negotiate?
Be interesting, but some people would say, how dare you hold that over her head? Your job is to strengthen your caucus, not tell people how to vote. But behind the scenes, I'm sure Nancy Pelosi and all those others were doing that. You can't tell me that wasn't being done by Newt Gingrich and others who just maybe are more street smart than him, Benjamin. Alex, listening over in Brooklyn, New York. Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. I think this is a stalemate situation. You know, this Ryan Donald's not going to be the Speaker of the House. Republicans are not going to, establishments are not going to vote for him. But Kevin McCarthy's not going to back down. We're going to end up with Steve Scalise. But Kevin McCarthy's whole entire political career is going to end if he gives up this. And this is what he wanted. He wanted to be Speaker of the House ever since he entered the Congress, kind of like Joe Biden wanting to be president. And I think the reason why this is going to go on for a long time, Republican rhinos aren't looking to have this finished up, because the longer this goes on and the longer we're in this dilemma where we don't have a Speaker of the House because of these 20 Republicans, in 2024 they'll be able to say, don't vote for a Trump-endorsed candidate for a MAGA Republican, because then we'll end up in the situation in the House. So this is going to go on for a long time. They're not looking to settle this. And Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz are definitely in no way going to vote for Kevin McCarthy. They might settle on Steve Scalise, but then they'll say, oh, we don't need any commitments from Steve Scalise because we trust him. And they're not going to get anything out of it. Steve Scalise is like Kevin McCarthy. But, Brian, here's my question. So
real quick,
Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, they're not going to vote for Kevin McCarthy, right? The other 18, if they vote for Kevin McCarthy, he can still become the Speaker of the House. So is there another one of these 18 Republicans that are at the same level as Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz that they would on no uncertain terms vote for Kevin McCarthy?
Or abstain. There's going to be – they say there's about seven. They got to knock it down to four, and that's going to be the push. And would you show just seven? So far they've kept 19, the block solid. Let's see if they'll break the block and just say, now it's time to go, and then put enormous pressure on the others and make everyone admit it. This is personal. There's no way this is good for the country. That might be the type of pressure. We come back. I'll squeeze in a few more, four more calls and wrap things up for this hour. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Brian Kilmeade Show here. We've got a few more minutes. And don't forget, we got the 8 o'clock show Saturday night. One Nation, the whole country can't get enough of it, so watch it at 8 and 11. If you have to DVR it on Fox News Channel, do it, but watch it that night. You know, I'm just thinking, I want to thank Talk Radio 95.3 WRSC for officially joining us. We had a stop and start, and I want to make sure that they're fully aboard. But if not, if you missed me or my earlier welcome as a brand new station, 95.3, you are now aboard carrying the show, and I know you're not going to regret it over in Pennsylvania. So let's find out if there's even more to know.
More to know.
All right, get this. Tom Hanks is speaking out about nepotism in Hollywood. He told New York Magazine that they, who published a scathing article outlining how nepotism babies have come to dominate the entertainment industry. He has a pushback. He discussed the topic because, you know, his other members of his family, including his wife, and others in his family who are now acting.
This is what we've been doing forever. It's what all of our kids grew up in. We have four kids. They're all very creative. They're all involved in some brand of storytelling. And if we were a plumbing supply business, or if we ran, you know, the florist shop down the street, the whole family would be putting in time at some point, even if it was just, you know, inventory at the end of the year. The thing that doesn't change no matter what happens, no matter who, what your last name is whether it works or not. I mean, that's the issue. Anytime any of us go off and try to tell a fresh story or create something that has a beginning and a middle of an end, doesn't matter what our last names are. We have to do the work in order to make that a true and authentic experience for the audience, and that's a much bigger task than worrying about whether anybody's going to try to scathe us or not.
I think it's an interesting perspective. It does open the door to have somebody you know. But ever in life, period. You want to work at MetLife Insurance? Helps to know somebody. You want to work at J.P. Morgan Chase? It helps to know somebody. Or you can create your own thing by interning, putting the time in. But if you're not good and you're not smart, or you don't put the time in to be smart, you're not going to succeed.
Yeah, completely. Tom Hanks, again, life lessons that apply everywhere.
Right, but he does have his son and wife are thriving in the industry because of his last name.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.